buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast.
In the post-apocalyptic thriller, The Economic Collapse Chronicles by best-selling author Mark Goodwin, America is on the cusp of financial annihilation. Matt and Karen Baer thought they were prepared for anything, but can they survive a total collapse of the economic system? If they want to live through the crisis, they'll have to think fast and move quickly. In a world where all the rules have changed and savagery is law, those who hesitate pay with their lives. The Kindle edition of The Economic Collapse Chronicles is now available as a box set. Buy your copy at Amazon.com today.
Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots. This is the second half of my interview with Sergeant Tim of Outlaw Patriot News. Enjoy the show. You had an article on Outlaw Patriot recently about expanding the Patriot Act. The bill didn't pass, but this is another classic example of what happens when the camel gets its nose under the tent, don't you think?
Oh, exactly. And, you know, I think this is something that people in our country still fail to understand, and that's whether you're talking about the income tax or any other law that either the federal or state government passes, once the government gets involved in something, they don't get back out of it. So as soon as they enacted the Patriot Act the first time, that meant that it was going to be permanent because the government never gives up on a program. I think that, you know, it's hard for me and I definitely can't get into any classified topics, but it's hard for me as having the background that I do to say that every part of the Patriot Act is bad. I have seen some good come out of it. My major issue with it is not the intention of the people who are currently carrying it out or the intention of even the people who originally crafted it, because I may be a bit naive, but I still like to believe that the intention was not a malevolent intention. But I think that the danger in it, you know, and I think that this is the way that we should frame it to people who don't really understand the fear that comes out of something like the Patriot Act, is whether you believe that this administration or the former administration or even a future administration will have your best interests at heart, and whether you believe that they'll put the powers that are in that act to misuse. You don't want to give the government too much power because they do have the ability to misuse it. And so it could be 5 years from now, it could be next year, it could be 20 years down the road. As long as they have that power to collect that data, there is the potential for misuse to be brought about. And I think that's the fear, rightly so, by a lot of the people who are in the Patriot movement, is that it's not necessarily that data is being misused now, but it's that at some future date, it could be used to persecute, to round up, or whatever, people that don't agree with what the administration is saying. And just to take that a little bit further, I know that a lot of people will say, you know, when people talk about the FEMA camps, one of the things that people have said to me a lot is, oh, that would never happen here. It has happened here. Not necessarily on the level of the FEMA camps, but in World War II, they did round up all of the Japanese and put them into camps. So definitely, you know, no matter how good you think a government is, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And if you give that government too much power over your life to the point where you're taken care of from cradle to grave, I mean, that's the exact same system that was in place in the Soviet Union. But if you give them that power, they're going to misuse it.
And out of Trump's possible picks for VP, I suppose I like Pence about as much as any of them. He's been a very strong supporter of the Second Amendment, and he's staunchly pro-life. But when he was in Congress, he was for making the Patriot Act permanent. What can we as citizens do to wake up folks like Mike Pence, who get it right on so many other issues? How do we get them to understand the importance of liberty and the Constitution? I mean, if we destroy our founding document and the principles inside of it while we're trying to preserve the country, what's the point?
And that's it exactly. You know, I said earlier, I am not a huge Trump supporter. I find a hard time supporting any of the guys, whether they're career politicians or not, that want to go into that office, because people in that office, their decisions and their policies have led to a lot of my friends dying. And that's something that I can't get over. And so I have a hard time supporting anyone that wants to go into that office. And that's just my own personal view. But how do we wake up people that have a good foundation, but maybe don't see the full picture? I think one of the things that Mike Pence was for while he was in Congress was the reenactment of the Patriot Act, that whenever it came up for renewal, or maybe he voted for it originally. My memory sometimes doesn't serve me well, but in any case, he was for the Patriot Act. And I think, you know, the problem is, and I think that it's possible that it's not just it's not the will of these politicians to necessarily be so blind to what's going on. But whenever you're in that position, you're surrounded by a bunch of people who control who has access to you and who doesn't. And so I think that we have to do our best as citizens. If we feel like our elected representatives, and let's not forget that those are people that, yes, we elect, but they are still to be our public servants. They are not over us. They are one of us, present us in those meetings, in those hearings, and in those offices. But we have to do our best to remind them of that duty, of that obligation, and while at the same time informing them. You know, if we feel like they're misinformed, we have to be the ones to get up and inform them. And that can be very difficult whenever we have as much money changing hands just to get access to those politicians. So we have a lot of problems here. I still believe that the United States of America is the greatest country on earth. But we do have problems, and we're headed down a dark road. And so, yeah, what we need to do, you know, I encourage everyone to get involved first in local politics, and then continue on to the state level, and if possible, get into the national level, because I think that we have a lot of people who are just, for lack of a better word, are just average Joes who have a lot of good ideas and a lot of good intentions. And everyone says, oh, you know, politics is corrupt. Politicians are corrupt. Well, the only way to change that is to get good people in politics. And then whenever we have people who have a somewhat of a foundation, like what you're talking about, then we have the duty as citizens. We have the duty as, fellow patriots to inform them on the topics, whether you're talking about the Patriot Act or whether you're talking about foreign policy. That's what comes along with the right to vote and the just being a good citizen, in my opinion.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proven to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on gold and silver. Check out Silver.com today. Trading Post in the Woods is ran by veteran crisis responders who know how important it is to be prepared. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits, preparedness and homesteading supplies, as well as skills training. Visit them online today at tradingpostinthewoods.com. You published another article on Outlaw Patriot News talking about the fear of the Lord. Have we lost that as a nation? And is that something that's being left out of the typical Sunday service in hopes that more uplifting sermons will fill pews and offering plates?
It's funny that you bring that up. I was born in the 70s. And so a lot of the church that I went to as a young child is in a rural area in Oklahoma in the 70s. And my family, I grew up Baptist. And my family went to a church that was plenty of brimstone and fire. And I don't think that we have enough of that now. People have, and definitely, you know, my God is a God that is loving and caring, and he's a father. But he's still the same God who will, he's a God of justice, and he is a God who will correct you. You know, I fully believe that a good father, when you screw up, your father is there to discipline you. And I believe that that's what the Lord does as well. I think that we have lost the fear of the Lord in this country. I mean, that's the only way that you can possibly explain the fact that we've killed, what, upwards of 60 million children since Roe versus Wade was enacted in 1973. And yet we somehow think that that's okay just to kill children out of convenience. It's the only way that we can in any way justify the actions of this country, where we have, I think it's roughly 25 veterans a day commit suicide because they're not getting the medical treatment that they deserve, where we have thousands of veterans who've come back from fighting wars supposedly in our name, and yet they're living homeless. But at the same time, we have plenty of money to bring in illegal immigrants across the border and house them even on military bases, and also say that we'll take in thousands and thousands of Syrian refugees. We have to take care of our own before we can take care of these people. And definitely, I think that you know, the way that you judge a people and you judge a nation is on how their own people, and we've been mistreating our people. I've seen some articles here lately talking about how some of the illegal immigrants that are on social programs, welfare and the like, are actually getting more money than our own U.S. citizens are in aid. We have sent so many production jobs and jobs period overseas that we have, you know, the federal government is the number one employer in this country now. All of that speaks to a far greater problem of not taking care of our own and not taking care of the least among us. And so we definitely have lost our fear of the Lord. You know, we live in a society also where our children are taught every day in school, and while they may not come out and say the atheism, you know, preach a program of atheism, they definitely teach that it's not a scientific point of view to believe in a creator. Yet whenever you get into most of our greatest minds, you know, the celebrated minds of science throughout history, the vast majority of those men were believers. And so I think that we've lost our fear in the Lord, and I think that whenever a people loses that fear in the Lord and they stop abiding by his law, they stop abiding by what he wants, they stop listening to him, they stop being obedient to him, then you can expect nothing less than for the leaders to also do the same. And once the leaders do, then you have created a society that is ripe for tyranny.
And I'm going to go back to two things that you touched on in that conversation. One thing that you said is that you talked about this atheistic worldview. Obviously, Hinduism is the belief that there's many gods, so that's a religious view. Christianity is the view that there's one God. That's obviously a religious view. So Darwinism and evolution, the belief that there's no God, that is a religious view, whether people want to call it that or not. And it's the official religious view of our school system, and which is the, you know, an offshoot of the government. So that's the official view of our government, is that there's no God. So that's their religious view. Now, when you have an atheistic worldview by a government like that, and then you talked about the troops that come home from the wars and they're suffering from PTSD, the only thing our atheistic government knows to do to help these guys is to prescribe drugs. Now, in your opinion, is PTSD, is that a physical problem that has a physical solution like drugs, or is that a spiritual issue that needs to be addressed spiritually? And is our atheistic government unable to address that, or is it a combination of both?
Well, first, let me just say this, and I would urge all of your listeners to go back and, go on YouTube and search out Ronald Reagan's Evil Empire speech that he gave. And in that speech, because I just recently went back and listened to it. I have a 17-year-old daughter who was writing a report on Reagan. And so in order to prep for that report, we went back and we listened to some of his speeches. And the first thing that struck me, and this has nothing to do with your question, but the first thing that struck me was his ability to speak and still take jabs at his opponents while not just out and out insulting them. But in that Evil Empire speech, he points to the fact that the Soviet Union was an atheist country and that there was no possible way that being an atheist country and having no principles of Christianity or belief in the Lord, that their system could benefit the people. And I think that goes exactly back to what you're talking about there. If you believe that there is no Lord, if you believe there's no God, and you're living life, what moral code do you have then that tells you right from wrong? Now, there are definitely people who will claim, well, I still have a moral code, but every moral code that is in Western society is developed out of that Christian code of chivalry that the knights in medieval times developed because of their religious faith and their Christian faith. Now, as far as the PTSD issue, I definitely think that it's a spiritual problem. I'll give you a little personal story, and that's that. Not too long ago, before I left that special duty, I spoke to the fact that I kind of hit a spiritual rock bottom. And during that time, I was experiencing a lot of anger, and it had caused some problems between my wife and I. I was having problems just with my family in general. I was having problems at work, and so I went to a behavioral health specialist to see what was going on with me, because I didn't completely understand what was going on. They diagnosed me with depression, and they put me on SSRI pills. And at first, it seemed to me that I got better. I had more energy. Everything seemed a little more focused and everything. But as time went on, and of course, it seemed like every couple of months, they would either change the one I was on, or they would up the dosage, or whatever. Because, you know, if I said, oh, well, you know, I was a little down about this, or, oh, yeah, I did get angry about this the other day, then they would just change the pill and they would change the dosage. And I finally got to the point, I'd been on them for a couple of years, and I got to the point where I just didn't feel anything at all. I felt like I was living my life as a zombie, straight off The Walking Dead on TV or something. When something would happen, all of my emotions were not based upon actual feelings that I was having. They were based upon how I logically knew I should react. You know, oh, that's good news, I should be happy, or that's funny, I should laugh. But none of it was actual real feelings. And it wasn't until, number one, I made the decision that I needed to come off of them, but number two, it wasn't until I came back to the Lord and did manage to get off of them, because I tried a couple of times on my own, but it wasn't until I got down on my knees and I prayed, and I told the Lord that if he would help me get off of those pills, that I would serve him for the rest of my life. It wasn't until that point that I actually got off of them. And so I definitely do think, because it's come out in some of my separation examinations and stuff, I have been diagnosed with PTSD. They misdiagnosed me with depression. So I definitely do think that there is a deeply spiritual, component to PTSD. And definitely I don't think that just stuffing more chemicals into your body is the solution to anything. Even if you do have a mental health problem, I don't think that it's something that you just shove more chemicals in to treat. I think that there can be counseling. I think spiritual counseling is the best kind of counseling, but counseling and other methods, but definitely just throwing pills at people solves absolutely nothing.
Wow. That's great. Can you talk to us a little bit about that process of your healing? Was it all 100% God, or were there things that he laid on your heart to do to be involved in your own healing, like daily Bible reading and prayer and worship, anything like that?
Absolutely. It came down to one night. Like I said, I had tried a couple of times to come off of them because I knew that I just didn't want to live the rest of my life the way that I was feeling at that time. And every time I tried on my own, I had failed. And I will tell you, it had been about 20 years since I had actually got down and prayed. And it came down to one night. I was sitting there. For anyone that has never been on those types of pills, whenever you go to come off of them, it's a very serious physical reaction. I had extreme headaches. I was very nauseous most of the time, very irritable. And so, it came down to one night. I was getting ready to go to bed. I was very nauseous, had a bad headache. And I got down and I started praying. And I told the Lord, I was like, look, I know that I have not been a faithful servant. I know that I've not been a good man. I've not been a good husband. I've not been a good father. But I need help, and I need help really bad. And I told him, you know, if you will help me through this, I will give my life over to you. And I won't say that things got... that it all went away. But I did immediately feel better. And I woke up the next morning and I had this urge to, because, you know, I think part of it was kind of maybe a psychological thing as far as, hey, that seemed to help. And so I did have the, I think that the Lord put it on me to get back into the Bible. I started reading the Bible again. I started looking online at different, whether it was YouTube shows, whether it was podcasts, just I was trying to absorb everything that I possibly could to make up for that time that I had missed in not serving the Lord. And you know, one of the things that is so funny is when I was younger, I went through a phase when I was about 18 years old, before I joined the military, where I had not been in the church for a while, but I felt this need for a spiritual connection. And I see this play out in society today. I think that's the reason why stuff like vampire movies and zombie movies and all these supernatural books and movies and everything are so popular, is because in our society, when we take out the element of God in the society and we teach that atheism is the way, there's still that hunger for a spiritual connection. And I definitely had that. And I went through and I read everything from writings by the Dalai Lama to pagan stuff, just looking for what I believed in. And I went back then and I read the Bible cover to cover, but I had so many questions and nobody seemed to be able to answer those questions. And so I was like, well, if I have all these questions, surely everyone else does too, but they just seem to ignore those questions and they go on. I need answers. You know, maybe that's fine for them. Maybe they can take that leap of faith, but I need an answer. And so, you know, fast forward to this time period where I'm trying to catch up on all the things that I missed. And I stumbled across guys like Steve Quell, Pastor David Langford, a ton of other people. And it's so funny because the questions that I'd had for all of those years, it just seemed like the Lord was pointing me to broadcasts where they discussed those very issues. And I was like, this is amazing. Why didn't I catch this before? And, you know, not only were they talking about what they believed, but they were backing it up with scripture. And I could go and I could check the scripture and I would sit down and I would pray on it. And it was around that time, you know, I told you that I had started, I was doing mostly news aggregation at the time on Outlaw Patriot. And it was at that time when I was coming back to the Lord that he put it on my heart, okay, I've given you, you know, I've led you down a path where you've gotten the ability to analyze events and you have experience and history as far as why these events are happening. And I've brought you back to me. Now I have work for you to do. I want you to take what's going on in the world. I want you to analyze it through your own experience and skills, but I want you to back that up with my word. And in this way, I want you to help my people understand what's going on. And so that's what I believe my calling is helping people understand what's going on. And I will tell you, there's a lot going on. The Lord is working. Yes, I do think that we have come into a time period where it is dark times. But at the same time, I see the Lord every day working and helping people and bringing people onto his team. It's funny, I have a friend who is studying to be a chaplain. And this one phrase that he said to me will always stick with me because we were discussing this very issue. And he said that his grandmother had told him when he was a kid, you know, the devil goes around and he picks his team. And when he picks his team and when he has his team do things, it's always very loud and gets a lot of attention. But the Lord works subtly. And so whenever he picks his team, maybe it doesn't make a lot of noise. And whenever they do things, maybe nobody pays attention to it. But the thing even though there's a louder noise made by the enemy, whenever God does things, it has a far greater impact.
What's the most concerning issue on the horizon for you right now?
I think for me, the most concerning issue, and it's not necessarily a world issue, it's more of a national issue, though I think that it will have geopolitical results, is this thing that's going on, with Black Lives Matter, but also the different, I call them extremist groups that have centered around the Republican National Convention, a very vocal minority of people who want to have their own political dialogue or their own political ideology front and center. Because I don't think that we've seen the worst of what's to come. I don't think we've seen the last of them. And to be quite frank, I'm no prophet. I don't make predictions or anything like that. But I very much worry that if Donald Trump is elected, whether or not he'll even see the White House, and if he does, whether or not he will he'll survive through his first year.
And I guess it would just take the attacks that we've seen in there were several that were just a little bit smaller than and weren't reported, like the ones in Dallas and Baton Rouge. There were other attacks in Georgia and Tennessee against police officers. But I suppose if we were to see multiple attacks in multiple cities, for let's say we had one on a Friday and then we had another one on a Saturday, and it looked like those were happening consecutively and more and more coordinated attempts and attacks, I would suspect that we'd probably at some point have martial law. Is that something that you think could happen?
I definitely think that could happen. I definitely think it's the direction that we're going in as well. And another thing to consider is, I know that you're probably aware of this, how fragile our food delivery system is in this country, and the fact that, you know, what you eat a lot of times is not actually produced where you live at, and it travels thousands of miles to get to your supermarket, and they start to institute martial law. That's going to slow down that process. Or B, if there is some kind of big terrorist attack that somehow either influences or even just slows down the trucking industry in this country, we're going to very quickly face a situation where things will get bad in a hurry. Most grocery stores only carry about 3 days worth of food, not even a full week's worth of food in their stock rooms. And then you couple that with, and I'm sure everyone has seen this, you know, a big storm's blowing in or people that live along the Gulf Coast or the Atlantic coastline, you know, maybe a hurricane's coming in, and the store shelves get emptied in a hurry. Well, if you have martial law or some kind of huge terrorist attack, it's going to happen the same way. And there's going to be tons of people who are left out in the cold, so to say, that aren't going to have the food and supplies that they need. It's just going to make that situation much worse.
We had one of my regular listeners, Bill, was traveling. He sent me an email. He was traveling through Minnesota during some of the protests, and where they had the interstate shut down, and he was pulled to the side of the road and talking to a trucker that was voicing the exact same concerns that you've just talked about. And there's a point to where the truckers are just going to say, that's it. We can't do our job, and we're not going to spend our time stuck on the side of the road, not unable to deliver a load and not get paid for it. So, call us when you get this cleared up, basically. So
right,
I guess getting prepared for something like that, folks need to really think about, number one is getting their food preps together and making sure that they've got a good deep larder of goods that they can survive on for some period of time that I would say should be at a bare minimum a month, And if you've got the month, then you should start working on building that up to 6 months at least. What else do you think folks can do to get prepared for such an event?
Well, I think definitely there's the food aspect. Definitely depending on the scenario, there's the water aspect of being able to have access to good, clean water. And maybe if you're living in Flint, Michigan, even your local water supply isn't good, clean water. But I think, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you need to go out and you need to buy gold and silver and all of that. I think if you have everything else in line, yeah, gold and silver is something to go out and buy.
But you can't eat
because,
it.
Do what?
But you can't eat it.
You can't eat it, and you can't defend yourself with it. I mean, right. You might be able to throw it at somebody, but maybe not hard enough to drop them. And definitely, if I didn't have it before I invested in gold or silver, I would invest in lead and go and get myself something to protect myself and my family with. You know, even if you're somebody who doesn't think that they'll need it, it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. And definitely if times got scarce, man, people will do some strange things to take care of the people that they love. And so you should be prepared to take whatever steps necessary to protect the people that you love. Also, I think the most important prep that you can do, and what we really need in this country, is people to get back into their Bibles and get right with the Lord, because you definitely want Him on your side if things decide to take a turn in the wrong direction. Other than that, I mean, there's a thousand things that you can do. But the basics are food, water, and self-defense. Once you have those in line, you know, you can start looking at different forms of currency, whether you're talking about gold or silver. You can start looking at upgrading the stuff that you already have. You can start looking at possibly even buying land for a bug out location. But definitely the first things are food, water, and protection. And definitely, you know, things change depending on where your region are, where you're located regionally as well. If you're located in a city, definitely you want to look at different places that you can go. If you're located rurally, then you need to be looking at how you're going to deal with the influx of people that are going to be coming from the cities. And, you know, I grew up in a rural area. And one of the things that I would say to other folks that are from rural areas is not everyone that's going to be coming out of the cities are going to be bad people. Yeah, there probably will be some, but not all of them are going to be bad people. So don't judge all of them by the actions of the few. Because I do think there is that tendency in this country overall, whether you're talking about the people coming out of California into states like Texas and stuff like that, that the actions of a few kind of ruin the whole group on the local population. But yeah, I think food, water, self-protection, and getting right with the Lord are the top four.
Sergeant Tim, just great stuff you've given us to think about today. Thank you so much for making time for us. Where can folks find your work?
Well, I wanted to thank you for having me on and again, let me get acquainted with your audience. I'm across a couple of different platforms. I'm on outlawpatriotnews.wordpress.com, and that's where you'll find my own personal articles and writings, as well as some writings from some associates of mine. Also, if you're on Twitter, it's @outlawpatriot. And then I'm also on Tumblr, and that's Outlaw Patriot as well.
Fantastic. Thanks again for making time for us.
Thank you so much.
Get prepared before disaster strikes. PrepperRecon.com offers Molly-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, tough strip bandages, and so much more. $99 includes shipping. Go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.